Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? Wash away your worries with Anabe. Anabe is the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slip covers made with performance fabric. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Shop washablesofas.com for early Black Friday savings, up to 60% off site-wide, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hunger in this country is a policy choice. And it means that there's a policy solution. And when we talk about childhood hunger, school meals, particularly free school meals through programs like CEP, they're part of that solution. They're a major driving point of that solution. It increases dignity. It raises the nutrition equity, right? It's allowing children to have access to the meals that they need so that they continue to do what they need to do in school. They need to focus.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design, a podcast that recognizes that justice doesn't just happen on its own. It is done through the hard work, commitment, and innovation of hardworking people to bring about the change that we want to see. You know, I often joke with my husband if I'm not focused or if I make a mistake or if I'm a little grumpy, I say, well, I'm hangry. You know, we all know that when we haven't had enough to eat, we are not at our best. But when we're talking about children, children in communities that are lower income earning, not having enough to eat can be really devastating. I found out that nearly 60% of children in low-income communities have reported coming to school hungry at least once. And many of them, up to 12%, are so distracted from their hunger that they can't concentrate in schools. This affects not only their grades. Studies have shown that it makes concentration harder for them, both in and out of school. Their academic performance suffers. They can even suffer from behavioral issues. And not getting adequate food can also make you more likely to become sick, to be ill, and then have to miss more class. So the problem is compounded. So that's why I'm so happy to be joined today by Erin Heisem, who is the Senior Child Nutrition Policy Analyst at the Food Research and Action Center, which has just released a report about ways that childhood hunger can be combated to ensure that students perform their best. Erin, thank you for joining me today.
Kimberly, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here and talking about my favorite topic, school meals.
So tell us a little bit who you are and what you do so our audience can get to know you.
Sure, absolutely. So I am a registered dietitian, but for as long as I've been interested in nutrition, I've really been interested in food access and food anthropology. Why do certain communities have access to certain foods and other communities don't. And so when I graduated as a registered dietitian, one of my first jobs was working for the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, a WIC clinic, in a busy WIC clinic in New Jersey on the Jersey Shore. And I would see everybody, every type of family, every makeup of parent, every makeup of child, every culture come through that door. And they all needed the same thing. They needed help and food assistance, and they needed community. And they would come in every 3 months, and we would talk about the nutritional status of their children. And after a few visits, the parents would know. They would know the nutrition education, but the behaviors wouldn't always change. And so it got me thinking, why? What is happening here? They know about iron deficiency anemia, and they know about sugar-sweetened beverages. But why are they unable to implement this change, behavior change? So I went to graduate school for public health. And soon after, I stayed in this world of federal nutrition programs, but I very narrowly focused on school meals and child nutrition programs. And I was able to work school meals at every level you can, from the state agency level to the federal level at USDA. And one of my most humbling and rewarding experiences is working for a large school district during the COVID-19 pandemic and really seeing the power that school meals has on the entire community. And I was so grateful to be able to join the team at FRAC when I did. Food Research and Action Center, as you mentioned, that's the name of the organization I work for. We commonly are referred to by FRAC. And we are the leading national nonprofit organization focused on anti-hunger efforts here in the United States. And we really work to strengthen the health and well-being of people across the country by strengthening and increasing access to the federal nutrition programs. We've been doing this work for over 50 years, and we've made tremendous strides in fighting hunger, but there's still so much more to do. As you mentioned, hunger is still a prevalent problem in households across this country.
Yeah, and just the latest FRAC report, of which you're an author, pointed out that the work that you do has helped 23 million children attending schools in high poverty areas get healthy school meals at no charge. So talk a little bit about how you help ensure that students are fed when they're in school.
Absolutely. So you mentioned how difficult it is to be a child facing hunger and food insecurity, right? And children who are struggling with hunger and food insecurity, of which there are nearly 14 million children in this country that live in households where their parents have to make this like heartbreaking decision. Do I pay rent or do I buy groceries? And the stress, the chronic stress of that on the child, it affects everything, right? It affects their health and their academics and their learning. And schools and school meals are part of the solution, especially when school meals are offered to all children at no charge, like they are through the community eligibility provision. So community eligibility, commonly called CEP, it's an option under school lunch, and it allows high need, high poverty schools to offer school meals to all students free of charge. And what it does is it eliminates that stigma. The stigma that's sometimes present in lunch lines, right? When you have a traditional tiered system, this child is eligible for free meals and that child's eligible for reduced price meals, that can create a social hierarchy in the cafeteria. But when we offer free meals to all children, like through CEP, it eliminates that stigma and it elevates nutrition equity. It increases participation in school breakfast and school lunch. And then the student and the school reap all the benefits of the school meals programs. As you mentioned, research at the top of the call, school meals are shown to improve health and academic outcomes, right? Children cannot learn on an empty stomach. So when we eliminate that barrier, when we give them the wholesome, nutritious meals that they need, then children are able to focus. They are able to concentrate, they are better behavior, they have less visits to the nurse's office, we see test scores improve, and they're on this path to success, right? That sets them up for academic and lifelong success.
And I really appreciate the point that you made about making this available to everyone, because I think for a lot of policies, and it would be my default to say, you know, policies need to be targeted to the people that really need it. But in this case, that is, I mean, I remember when I was in school and the different tiered system, when you got to the lunch line between those who could pay or had some other way of paying, that really did create a social issue among students, and how important that is not to layer more inequities with the solutions that we're applying. So I'm really glad that you made that point. So another point I want to dig in a little more, because we're talking about why this is so important to children, but this is important to schools, and the CEP program actually benefits schools greatly. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I mean, it benefits every area of a school system. So when you look at the academics and you look in the classroom, we have talked to teachers around the country that say when we implement strong school breakfast programs, meaning that we offer breakfast free of charge and we incorporate it into the school day, and children start their day nourished, behavior improves, their classroom environment improves, there's less disruptions, and the whole class is able to focus. You know, it could just take one hungry child that might be disrupting the entire environment, right? By no fault of his own, and therefore the whole class is then affected by their learning. So we see academics improve. We've talked to nurses, school nurses, who say that when they start implementing community eligibility, when we start offering healthy school meals for all, robust breakfast programs, visits to the nurse's office decrease. Mm. You know, oftentimes you'll see in elementary schools, children will go down to the nurse's office and they're really asking for a snack because they haven't eaten. And so the nurse is able to go back to focus on the activities that she needs to do because the children are fed in these programs. And community eligibility is really, it's smart business for school nutrition departments. School nutrition departments are running these little mini businesses within a school system. And I'm not sure everyone always realizes what is happening behind the scenes. Food service directors are very strategic and very intelligent on how they are able to offer wholesome, nutritious, culturally responsive meals to large populations of children on shoestring budgets. And there's a lot of bureaucratic red tape in school meals programs. There's a lot of paperwork and regulation. And when a school adopts community eligibility, it cuts through that administrative burden. The paperwork requirements are reduced, and it streamlines operations and increases efficiencies so that we have increases in operational efficiencies. We have increases in the number of meals served, which leads to economies of scale. And it gives school nutrition departments time. It gives them time back so that they can focus on their mission, which is feeding children. We see that school nutrition departments, when they are no longer burdened with the paperwork of school meals and they're able to implement community eligibility, they can take on initiatives such as farm to school or scratch cooking or culinary training. They can embark on wellness initiatives for students and their families because they're not saddled with all the administrative burdens that sometimes accompany traditional school meal programs.
Yeah. So, and I want to be clear that you are a nonprofit organization. You are not a governmental program or a for-profit program. Mm-hmm. This is a nonprofit doing this work. And as I said, the report that you just pointed out says you are now in 23 million in schools that impact 23 million students with this. So this is really important when you're talking about, and I want to be clear that you are a nonprofit organization that is aiding students, but how do you close the gap between all the schools that need a program like this and the ones that have them? What do schools need in order to access things like the CEP program? And what do you need in order to provide this to more schools?
That's a great question, Kimberly. Thank you for asking that. So generally speaking, simply, we need to invest in school meals. We need to invest in our children's future by ensuring that they have the nourishment now so that they can succeed academically and in the long run. And the way that we do that with the community eligibility program is we call on Congress to increase the amount of federal reimbursement schools that are eligible for this program receive so they can participate, because there is a gap. We have seen tremendous growth in the program. We currently have one out of every two schools that operate the National School Lunch Program use CEP to offer free school meals to their students. And I think that speaks to the benefit that community eligibility brings to the school and to the child, right? Schools want to implement this program. However, without additional financial resources, without additional investments into the schools themselves and their nutrition departments, many eligible schools are unable to adopt this program. We've seen this successfully on state levels. So we see the power of state policy when states choose to subsidize school meals and really invest in their school meal program. More schools are able to adopt community eligibility, and more schools are able to offer healthy school meals for all students.
So we sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but just sort of help me and our listeners understand a little bit as we're having this discussion, how school meals are funded on the federal and state level. And it varies from state to state, right?
So on the federal level, traditionally, schools that are not participating in community eligibility are reimbursed based off the individual student's eligibility level. So an individual child will submit a household meal application, a school meal application, or they will be participating in another means-tested program such as SNAP. Right? And a data matching process occurs that determines they are eligible for free school meals without the application.
Got it.
And then every child in that school has an eligibility. This child is eligible for free meals. This child's eligible for reduced price meals. This child's eligible for paid meals. And the school is reimbursed per meal based on that student's eligibility. In community eligibility schools, what happens is that school meal application is removed. So that burden on the family of filling out that paperwork and the burden on the school of processing that paperwork is eliminated. And that's why we say it cuts through that administrative burden. It eliminates that administrative burden, right? And the way the schools are reimbursed is on their percentage of poverty. So all of the students who are directly certified for free meals based on their participation in another assistance program like SNAP or in many states, Medicaid, those children are automatically qualified for free meals. A multiplier is then applied to that percentage, and that gives you the percent of meals that will be reimbursed at the federal free rate. And the rest of them are reimbursed at a lower federal paid rate. So the higher the poverty rate in a school, the higher the need in the school, the more federal money CEP schools receive. The lower the poverty rate, the less money. And so that's where it really starts to become troublesome for some schools who are eligible for CEP, but they can't cover the cost because the federal multiplier is inadequate and it needs to be raised. It needs to be raised so that all schools who are eligible for this program are able to adopt it and their children and their communities reap the benefits.
That's so important because we talk about, I know as a journalist, I talk a lot about, you know, what the government needs to fund, what the government priorities are, and how that directly impacts citizens. But in this case, how the government reimburses has a direct impact, not just on the students, but on organizations that are trying to help bridge that gap, that you are directly affected, even though you are trying to help the government essentially feed more people. I mean, this may feel wonky, but it's so very important when we're trying to pinpoint exactly what the causes of problems like childhood hunger are and exactly what the solutions are. So I know this is a little technical, but I think that that was important for our conversation. And I want to let you continue talking about what you need, what you need at FRAC.
I think the biggest support your listeners can give is to advocate. Right, to support and understand school meals programs, to know the benefits about school meals and how they are a solution in this crisis of child hunger in America, right? So get to know your school district, get to know your food and nutrition service department, and then reach out to your representatives. Reach out to your representatives and say that you support school meals. We need to invest in programs like the community eligibility provision, and ultimately, we need nationwide healthy school meals for all. We need school meals to be available to every child in every school in every state, regardless of income. We don't means test anything else in a school. We don't means test textbooks or transportation. We don't need to do this for school lunch and school breakfast either. And if someone's a little hesitant and said, I've never contacted my representative, we've got you at FRAC. You know, you can visit our website and we have an action network, our FRAC action network, that'll directly link you to your representatives and you can shoot them an email saying, I support school meals. I support the community eligibility provision and we need to make healthy school meals a reality nationwide.
And I will put the website in the show notes for this podcast so listeners will be able to find it there. But there is, as you mentioned, also a role for the state to play here too, and that some states have created subsidies to help bridge that gap, but not all of them have. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic was absolutely horrific nationwide. But one of the things that we saw in relation to school meals was this power and potential of healthy school meals for all and what it means for schools, children, and communities. And during that time, the federal government had issued waivers that allowed all schools to serve all children free school meals. And when those waivers ended, schools and districts and states did not want to return to this traditional system of free, reduced price, and paid. So since that time, we've seen great advocacy efforts across the nation for a network of anti-hunger partners that have been passing state policy to support school meals. So currently we have 8 states that have healthy school meals for all policies, meaning all of the schools that are eligible, all of the children in those schools are able to get a free school meal. We also have states that are working towards healthy school meals for all. And in the meantime, they've passed CEP subsidies. So states like New York, Washington, Oregon, they provide state aid to schools that want to adopt community eligibility. And what this does is it makes community eligibility financially feasible for school nutrition departments. So school nutrition departments can get the state subsidy, get that investment and support their operation, and then focus on feeding children so that children can have access to the nutritious meals they need to learn and thrive.
Wow. So what else should we leave our listeners with, whether they have children or don't, just in terms of what tools we have and what we can be doing to better care for our children, not just so that, as I said, not just so that they can perform better in schools, but that this has a lifelong implication for them without that. We saw, as you said, we still are grappling with all of the impacts on school-age children of the pandemic. I mean, that I think we haven't scratched the surface of that. But even that was a lesson that was learned during the pandemic, how to feed kids. And we did that, but like many other policies, we have pulled away from that again. So how should our listeners be thinking about this issue of ensuring food stability for our youngest people as a aspect of protecting our democracy?
Absolutely. You know, hunger in this country is a policy choice, and it means that there's a policy solution. And when we talk about childhood hunger, school meals, particularly free school meals through programs like CEP, they're part of that solution. They're a major driving point of that solution. It increases dignity. It raises the nutrition equity. Right? It's allowing children to have access to the meals that they need so that they continue to do what they need to do in school. They need to focus, right? They need to learn. They need to socialize. They need their mental and emotional and physical and social health to be cared for. You know, and what we see is when schools adopt strong nutrition programs, when they adopt strong breakfast programs and they adopt strong lunch programs, children tell us, I feel like I'm cared for. I feel like someone cares for me. And when we talk to parents, parents say, thank you. I feel like I'm cared for. And that's what schools are. They're communities, right? They're communities. You know, recently I was at a School Nutrition Association event and I was given a presentation about healthy school meals for all and community eligibility and ways that school nutrition professionals, like frontline cafeteria staff, can advocate for these programs in their state, right? And these are the men and women and people who are serving the meals to our children day in and day out. Like, who better to tell the story than the ones who are doing it every single day? And at the end of the session, I gave everyone a compostable lunch tray, you know, a 5-compartment lunch tray where you would put your milk, you would put your vegetables. And I said, if you want to participate in this little advocacy initiative, write down why you think healthy school meals are important to you, why you think it's important for all children to have access to this. And at the end of the session, everyone left and I collected all the trays and I took one tray. And in this very small handwriting in the corner of the tray was a story written. And the woman said, I am a school nutrition professional. I work in a cafeteria in our school district and I depend on free school meals for my own children. Mm. I wouldn't be able to feed my children the nourishment they need as healthy as possible. Like, school meals offer healthy options without this program. Please make it available to everyone. And we hear this time and again. We hear this time and again, parents saying, you know, high food costs, high gas costs, high utility costs. I lost my job. My partner got sick. You know, things happen and it's challenging. And if we can send our children to school knowing that they are going to have the nutrition they need, that they're going to get a healthy school breakfast, they're going to get a healthy school lunch, it takes some of that stress of parenting off their plates. And it's really what we need to do for our whole community.
It is what we need to do for our whole community. I'm sure many of us remember how important it was to have school assistance for our meals when we were growing up, what that meant for our households, whether it's because you have parents who work early shifts and they're not home at the time that the kids are eating breakfast before school, or any number of other reasons that this can slip through the cracks. It's so important that it doesn't. And Erin Heisem, I am so grateful to you for your work and for joining me today to talk about this really important issue. This is so valuable. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, Erin is, well, she dropped a lot of knowledge today, and she was right about a lot of things. But one thing that sticks with me is poverty is a policy choice. I know we hear that said as sort of like a platitude, but this demonstrates exactly how policy choices are seen in America. We see it with our own eyes and we see it through the performance of our children in school when they don't get enough to eat. So I agree that this is something we need to press our leaders to ensure at the state level and the federal level that these children are being fed. And I appreciate the folks at FARC and Erin's work in trying to make that happen. That's Justice by Design for this week. Don't forget to follow the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. If you give a 5-star rating to the podcast too, you know what? That helps other people find it. And I think it's really important, especially right now where we are in America, that we focus on the areas where we need to see change and focus on how that change happens and how people like Erin and all of us can be a part of that change. I'm Kimberly Akinstor. See you next week with a new episode of Justice by Design.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.